This podcast is brought to you by Marriage Equality Campaign Wellington and PrideNZ.com.
Kia ora e te whanau and welcome to the Marriage Equality Conference. We're here tonight to talk about fighting homophobia, workplaces, schools, family and elsewhere. It's my privilege to be here as the chair for tonight. I am the conference chair and my name is Rawa Karatai. And we have a few pretty decent people on the panel tonight. Not pretty decent, they are decent people. we've got... Well, and it is my job to try to control this lot. It's going to be quite entertaining. Okay, we have Nigel Studdard at the end. He's come all the way from Northland, so please a round of applause for him. We've got Steve Farrow from PPTA Rainbow Network. We have Eileen Brown from Out at Work. Bill Logan, long-time queer activist, especially from 1986, and helping with the conference, so a round of applause for his help. And we do hope to have Jan Logie sometime. Tonight's run sheet is basically we're going to go through these guys. We'll get the panel. We'll get them over and done with, and you know you can move on. But basically, you know, it is a really serious issue. It's one of the major campaigns that I personally think is important. I was fortunate enough to be in Australia to launch their anti-homophobia campaign recently. Well, you guys were here rallying for this campaign. So it's a privilege to be welcoming you all here tonight. We've had a great time so far at conference. Last night we had Sir Ian saying that he could potentially get married in Middle Earth, which is quite exciting, and it hit international media coverage, which I'm very proud of. We are in France Press, which is quite exciting. So, you know, our messages are getting out there and wide and far, and to have Sir Ian to support us has been fantastic, actually. Each of the panel members will be talking about their experiences. You'll obviously know the different connections, but for those who don't know, you'll have to just wait. I'm a bit tired to introduce a little bit, but that's okay. But we will have them to go through, and then there will be questions and comments at the end. Just note that we are being recorded at the moment, so if you don't want to be recorded, please say so or come and see us at the end. The technicians at the back will cut your comments out if you are wanting to ask a question. And we'll have a chance for final remarks and general notices at the end. I now welcome Bill Logan to speak.
Mostly I want to talk about Queer Avengers, which is really one of the more amazing organisations I've ever had anything to do with. If only for the rather incredibly diverse range of people involved in it. The widest range of age and gender identity and every other kind of thing that you can think of. It started, really, I think, with a round of rather nasty gay bashings in Wellington. What was it, only last year? Early last year? And we had this big demonstration, Queer the Night. And out of that was a determination not to let it go on and not to leave it at a single demonstration, but to give it a continuing existence. And so we set up this little organization. And we sat around for quite a long time simply talking about what our priorities would be. And so we kind of developed, well, there's this old myth that the world rests on three whales. And I see Queer Avengers as having three whales that it sits on. The question of homophobia in schools, the question of the oppression of trans folk, and the question of homophobia in relation to old age. Jan? So, schools, I believe, are the worst place in New Zealand to not be straight. I suppose teenagers are, by their nature, trying to work out who they are and a bit difficult about it. And some of that difficulty in the context of New Zealand turns out to be hurting one another if they don't fit a proper gender stereotype, very often. And that is often supported, more or less actively, sometimes not so actively, by the staff at the schools. So you have an environment where there's bullying in many places, and that's pretty nasty. It's reinforced by uniform codes and other, like bathrooms and so on, which make it difficult to decide, to be neutral, to change your mind. And there's nowhere to go that's intersex in many, many cases. We need teacher education. We need systematic intervention against bullying. We need queer straight alliances or similar institutions in every school. We need the ERO, the Education Review Authority, to check in every school, in every report they do, on whether there is bullying at a school, whether there is homophobia. That should be routine. It can be done very, very easily just by a signature from the minister. Not a big reform to ask. But they're slow. And it would make a huge difference, actually, just that little change that every school was reported on in relation to bullying and homophobia and problems in that school. And we also need mechanisms to support kids who are identified at school as having problems from their families. Because we, in queer support organisations, very often find that there's kids kicked out of their families. And there's got to be some way of catching this up. You know, 15, 16-year-olds kicked out of their families. And we actually have no way of dealing with this as a society. It's extraordinarily difficult to get the independent youth benefit for these kids. And they are universally suicidal. Like, I don't know of exceptions. There must be exceptions. But I don't know of exceptions to kids getting kicked out of home and being suicidal. So there's a huge set of problems there, and Queer Avengers sees this as one of its main priorities. We also see support for trans struggles as a priority. We tend to be guided by trans organisations who are active on these issues. We wish to support access to decent health care and medical attention, and we want to support extension of the human rights legislation for trans folk. And the third thing is queer old people, because queer old people, like other old people, get forgotten. And if you get forgotten in the context of being heterosexual, the forgetting, it can be unfortunate, but it isn't quite as alienating. and the general desexualization of the old is much more severe in our society for queer people. We haven't got very far with that set of projects. We're an organization that does a lot of talking, a lot of working out of what we should do. We have an ethos, and we haven't got very far with the talking in relation to old age queer issues. The ethos of talking, of thinking about family structures, ideology, politics, is pretty unusual, I find, in this organization. At this time, at this historical period, there is not much talk among young people in particular in New Zealand about these kinds of issues. And one of the exceptions to that lack of talk is in Queer Avengers. So as a group that is dominated by young people, grappling these issues and giving attention to the wider community and not their own narrow concerns is pretty impressive, I think. It's an organization which gives a place for thought, a place for discussion, a place for completely unrestricted sexualities and identities, and a place for a lot of laughter. One of the things which is unusual, I go to a lot of meetings, and I must say that one of the differences about Queer Avengers is that there's an awful lot of laughter at those meetings. So I think on those grounds alone, it's an organization which should be taken pretty seriously. The politics of members of Queer Avengers ranges from not much at all to a bit liberal to raving commie. I'm at one end of that spectrum. I won't tell you which end. But the interesting thing about it is that there's a huge tolerance and openness to each other's opinions. And so there's tends to be a bit of a ferment of ideas and a productive tension of ideas in the organization. So I think that we've got to, I was asked to get up and talk about the organization. I'm very proud to have been asked to do that because I think that it's an organization which offers more to our communities than any other single organization there is. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. Next up, we're going to have Eileen Brown and Steve Farrow to talk about Out at Work and PPTA in the Rainbow Network. I've had the great pleasure to work with Eileen in a recent campaign, and that was a great experience. Thank you for that. But thank you for coming along tonight as well.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Rawa. Steve's my union brother, and we're one tonight. So I don't know what you call us, but I'm going to talk a bit about the Out at Work Network, which is the CTU, New Zealand Council of Trade Unions Network. And Steve is from the Post-Primary Teachers Association, and that's an affiliate of the CTU, and that union has its own network too. But let me tell you a little bit about our network, and it was great to follow Bill. I loved the comment that you made about a lot of laughter, because I'm involved in quite a lot of CTU groups, and I'd have to say, see, the Keep Our Assets sales campaign had a lot of laughter too, and but certainly Out at Work, we have a lot of laughter, and yeah, a lot of creativity. So it's our network for takatāpui, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex and whāwhawhine union members. And any member of a union affiliated to the CTU can belong to the Out at Work network. So some unions, like the PPTA, like the Post Primary Teachers Association, like the Public Service, and I recognise a couple of Out at Work people from the PSA here, or who have been members of the PSA Out at Work network here tonight. Some unions, like those unions, as well as the Service and Food Workers Union, have got networks of their own. But it does mean when we have a CTU network that any member of a union who's affiliated to the CTU can be part of a network. And many unions don't have networks. Takatāpui, lesbian, gay, transgender, intersex and whāwhawhine workers, and from now on I'll just use the word queer because that's how we get stuck with acronyms, and that's the word that we chose to use. So that queer workers are a sizeable group in the New Zealand workforce, and there are significant employment issues, and I'm sure we'll hear some of them tonight. The Human Rights Commission inquiry to Be Who I Am found that work discrimination was the most common discrimination faced by transgender workers. And discrimination is one of the most common forms of discrimination in the workplace is one of the most common forms of discrimination experienced by queer workers. So our network's committed to exposing the employment issues that queer workers face and to eliminate discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity and gender expression. Highlighting those issues is a fundamental objective for us. But it's not only a fight about discrimination in the workforce. We also have a challenge in the union movement too. While diversity is seen as one of the strengths of the union movement, in many cases the concept of diversity in trade unions falls well short of celebrating and accepting sexual diversity. So we organise in our network the fight against homophobia and transphobia in a number of different ways. I just want to recognise the work of Jack Byrne from the Human Rights Commission, who has been very involved in our network and educated us a lot about transphobia. A critical event for us is our biennial camp, and camp's spelt K-A-M-P, where queer union members get together with speakers, workshops and training events which have a focus on union employment issues, like the kind of issues that workers are facing now with the reduction of employment rights. But we also plan and organise about the fight against homophobia and transphobia and make a plan about things that we're going to do in the following 2 years. Marnie Bruce Mitchell has been a speaker at our camp a number of times and led workshops on transgender awareness and training, and they are very, very important, and they're so life-changing, I think. That's certainly the feedback that we've had. We've had some pretty amazing speakers that have inspired us over the 5 camps. What's been most powerful is people telling their personal stories and challenging us as a network and guiding our kaupapa and helping us recognise and challenge our own internal homophobia and transphobia. So it's really important for us to be a constitutional part of the CTU. We are in the constitution, I can't remember what number, but this being part of the constitution gives us a standing. It enables us to respond on issues of significant importance. This week we made a press statement followed by the International Trade Union Confederation's press statement about the current bill before the Ugandan Parliament, which brings the death penalty for certain homosexual acts, and I'm sure people here know about it, and we can find out some information. You can find out some information if you want further. We wrote to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Murray McCulley, urging him to take a stand on the and urging that the Commonwealth Leaders Forum should take a stand against Uganda on this bill. The CTU has endorsed the Montreal Declaration on the Rights of LGBTI Workers and people and supports the Yogyakarta principles. So we actually have established policy for standing up and speaking out against gay and human rights abuses when we need to speak out publicly. So finally, in relation to the Marriage Equality Bill, the Outer Work Network was quite well prepared with a position on marriage equality before the bill was even drawn. After we witnessed a fiasco on the other side of the ditch with the position of the Aussie Trade Union movement on marriage equality, our youth network and our Outer Work Network developed a paper the end of last year, which placed the reasons why the CTU and our unions should support marriage equality and same-sex marriage and same-sex adoption. And that paper was unanimously supported by our affiliates in February 2012. The basis in our position paper was firmly on equality. And how can trade unionists not vote for equality? So no wonder we were unanimously, we got a unanimous endorsement. Because equality is a fundamental trade union value. We said in that paper that trade unions need to be on the right side of history, in New Zealand at least, on this issue. So we acknowledge that the CTU leadership, Helen Kelly and Peter Conway, are completely supportive of our Outer Work Network, including we get some financial support. But that support exists because of the hard work, leadership and commitment of people in the Outer Work Network who fly the flag every day in their unions and in their workplaces and are totally committed to a fight against homophobia and transphobia. So in 8 days, we're going to go to the Select Committee and we'll be represented by Karina Brown from the Outer Work Network, comes from Christchurch, and Helen Kelly, who will represent the CTU, and we'll inform the New Zealand Parliament that the CTU supports marriage equality because a core trade union value is equality. So thanks very much. I've got a couple of promos. We've got that little pamphlet on our network. And one thing I didn't mention, which I'll just refer to lastly, is that the Public Service Association have done some very interesting work on a paper called Sexual Orientation and Gender Minorities in the New Zealand Workplace. And it is online, so if you are interested, just speak to me, speak to Sarah. I'm sure she'll head you in the right direction. But that's quite an interesting paper looking at the experience of New Zealand public sector workers in the workplace today. So, thank you. I'll pass over to Steve.
Kia ora te whānau. PBDA, Post-Primary Teachers Association, has had a rainbow network. Originally it was called the Safe Schools Task Force. Lovely mouthful. And that was established in the mid-1990s. It was constituted as a result of a vote at PPA annual conference, and its original brief was to prepare materials that could be used in educating teachers and raising the issues of homophobia, and equality and all those sorts of things. And those things were written in around about the turn of the century. Since then, the group has continued and about 18 months ago changed its name to the Rainbow Network. One of the things that has, there wasn't a lot of uptake, I must say, out of the materials that were originally written. And there is a Safe School toolkit that's on the PPA website, and anybody, I think, actually can get to it from the public side. But about 18 months, 2 years ago, one of the members of the task force was actually sent to a seminar thing in Aussie that was run by some educators from the National Education Association, which is one of the big American teacher unions. And they actually have dedicated GLBTI educators for work within the union. New Zealand hasn't managed to get that far yet, really. But these people were running workshops on the sorts of courses that could be delivered. The person who went for us came back and reworked the material so that it had New Zealand focus, and we're now trying to run that out across the country. And the first one is about language. The idea is that it would be an after-school professional development session of about an hour to an hour and a quarter that would be run with the whole staff. Naturally enough, for that to happen, you've actually got to be invited in. And as comments were made by Bill before, schools can be very difficult places in terms of believing that actually the problem exists. The number of times we've heard that statement, there are no gays in this school. Oh, right. actually, talking about homophobia, I do have some personal experience of it. Not that I'm here to put hearts on sleeves and stuff, but having been put in the situation only because I moved to a small town, which I actually liked the town, a place called Westport, where I was teaching at the high school there, and not long after I arrived, I met a very nice man who was a long-term resident. He'd been born there. And he said to me, "You've only got to be seen down the, you've been seen down the street with me once. If you're seen down the street with me twice, you're out." I chose to be seen twice. Now, by then, I'd been teaching for 20 years. I didn't have too many problems with class discipline. All of a sudden, every arsehole kid now had a reason why they could act up in my room. And it did become absolutely, if I'd been 23, the age I was when I started teaching, instead of 42, I actually probably would have died over the harassment that happened. And that was despite the fact that, that was 1996, despite the fact that 3 years earlier the Human Rights Act had been passed, which outlawed discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. My boss's view, when a colleague of mine asked him about it, was that he neither condemned nor condoned. I actually couldn't leave my room during intervals and lunchtimes unlocked, because if I did, I'd come back and find it turned upside down. Nobody ever found out who the kids were. But that actually does happen in New Zealand schools. I also know since those, and I left Westport in 2003, and I left regretfully, and I taught at the high school by then for 8 years, the number of kids who have contacted me from that school since then, who I wouldn't have had a clue what their sexual orientation was, I mean, as a teacher it's not really a thing of much interest to me about the pupils in front of me, but who've come to me afterwards and said that they appreciated what I'd had to put up with, but also that it was actually worth having visible gay, lesbian, intersex, transgendered people working in the education system in terms of role modelling and normalisation of our condition within society. So, working towards that, jumping now forward a bit to the Rainbow Task Force, the materials that were brought back have been reworked, and it gets a staff to examine, first of all it says why you need to examine it, it looks at pedagogy of, hey, we've got to look after the safety of all kids, and if we don't look after their safety first, they'll never learn. So, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, all that garbage. And then have a look at their understanding of what the words GLBTI and, exactly what is meant. And then look at why it might be needed to address language in schools across the board. And we use the Youth Health 2002 was it, and 2007, and there's a new mine of information that's just about to arrive out of the one done last year, and highlight the terrible statistics that are demonstrated there of what happens to gay and lesbian students and intersex and transgender. And then interspersed that with a few of those lovely public service announcement advertisements that happen in America, none of which happen in New Zealand. Things like "it's so gay" and people being challenged over that. And then get them to talk about how they might challenge that sort of... And we keep it really simple. In talking about language, in the end, what we want them to challenge is any student who says, "that's gay." And just doing that in every classroom, every time. I remember I used to say when kids in my class who knew I was gay would say about something else that's gay, I'd say, "no, it isn't. It's netball." And they'd go, "what, Mr. Ferrer?" You know. But teachers who don't realise it's a problem are a problem. Now, what we have done with this program, I co-facilitated it with a member of executive to the PPA National Executive this year, so that they could see what the hell we were talking about. And then a pilot program was established where we tried to get to 10 to a dozen schools across the country, single sex, rural, you know, a whole mix. And the program has been delivered. The evaluation hasn't yet happened. But if you know anybody who's attached to a high school, get them to contact PPDA and we will have the program taken to them. So that's what an individual union's doing to try and combat that problem within the education sector. Going back to something you said, Bill, actually there was a change under Chris Carter. He wasn't a very good Minister of Education, unfortunately, but he did get added in to the inspection of schools, the thing about looking at homophobic rules and regs within the school. Unfortunately, government since then, you know, its leadership and insistence, and that's why getting buy-in within a school, it takes the principal, and getting a buy-in for the ministry or ERO, actually they need to be hounded by their political masters. There isn't that will at the moment, unfortunately. I do know that both PPDA and lots of other organisations, Rainbow Wellington, for example, have lobbied successive governments that actually just addressing bullying isn't enough. Homophobic bullying is actually quite a separate beast and is partly the reason for the difficulties that a particular group of students in a school faces. So, that's what's happening in some places.
Thank you, Eileen and Steve. After today's discussion, we had Teddy talk about QSAs and organising in schools, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of discussion, if not at question time, but after, but networks, like I said earlier. It's my privilege to introduce a phenomenal star. I've been watching this person for a very long time, since I found out about her, and have been quite inspired by the work that she continues to do on an everyday basis. Jan is a fellow colleague. I'm fortunate enough to work with her sometimes, but I met Jan during the national elections last year. Fortunately, I did something a bit silly, but she's forgiven me since, I hope. She doesn't even know about it. But Jan has done an amazing amount of work, not only for the queer community, but for women's rights. And I really do look forward to seeing her career develop over time, and am very happy to see the work that you do in Parliament and outside Parliament. So welcome to the stage, Jan.
I'm a little embarrassed about that introduction, thanks. So tonight, and it's great, I see Murray Rich in the audience here, and I'm going to talk quite a bit about your research, Murray, actually, and So while not being the expert, it's your work that kind of gives the basis for a lot of my thinking about where things are at the moment, which was a report that was sponsored by Kevin Haag that Murray researched and wrote last year called How Do We Make It Better? And it's about the safety of queer youth. And I think gives us a lot of really, really good pointers about what we need to be doing in this country. And I also want to talk a bit about, I guess, the community and voluntary sector, because that's where I come from, and share a kind of, I think, a story that's a bit of a contrast or a bit of an example, I think, of what we could be doing, which is, and it's kind of a personal story, my coming out story as well. Because Murray's research shows that for young queer youth, one of the biggest problems is just the assumption of heterosexuality and the fact that, you know, we're living in a world that's just assuming everyone's straight. And when you're trying to work out your place in the world and work out who you are, and you're surrounded by all these images that are telling you what it is to be straight, and what you're feeling and what you're noticing in yourself doesn't match that, it's a problem. And it causes a lot of problem. And if I think for myself, you know, now I identify as a lesbian. When I was at school, you know, I tried having boyfriends. My first boyfriend thought I was a lesbian. I didn't get it. all the pictures on my walls were girls. I didn't know what he was talking about. Like, because it just wasn't an option. I just had no sense that that was any kind of reality. It was just, you know, you were straight. So I was trying my best. It wasn't quite working, but I was trying. And there were a lot of problems for me that went along with that. You know, I was really, really unhappy. Had mental health issues. Made no connection to any of that stuff. They weren't related in my head. I had no understanding that it was about sexuality at all. It was just, I didn't get the world. And then, interestingly, I moved to Wellington. So that was kind of going all through university, and university being really the same. Like, very, in fact, possibly as, you know, living in hostels and universities. And I know Sarah's doing research on that, and I'm really interested in the outcomes of that, because for me it was a very, very heterosexual environment and incredibly difficult to try and be straight in when you weren't really, which I can now say, reflecting back on. And then moved to Wellington and worked for Women's Refuge. And Women's Refuge is a really interesting organisation, because there are four cornerstone values within Refuge, and one of those is feminism, another is biculturalism, another is collectivism, and the fourth one is lesbian visibility. And on my very first day at work, in the weekend actually, I had to go and pick up some donations, and I was going to be working with a volunteer, and I had to go in the door and knock on the door and pick her up. And I opened the door and was like, oh, oh, gosh. You know, like, and I'm sure there was a whole lot more to it than that. But, and she was incredibly hot. But there was something about there being in that environment, in that organisation, a clear naming of a space to be that I do think influenced my ability to be. And I think it's quite profound. And it's something that is a very, very, very rare space. And in that space, you know, the lesbian, within, and I think, you know, obviously there's issues with the naming of that, that it's lesbian visibility, it's not any wider than that. But it was for me, luckily, being lesbian, incredibly freeing. And the collective, there was a collective. So there was the lesbian collective and or caucus and the rest of the collective. And all the cool kids were in the lesbian caucus, which also really helped because it was, you know, that was this kind of group that you were drawn to. And if you weren't, and I resisted coming up publicly for a while because it was, I wanted to, and I loved being able to, with this newfound knowledge, be able to challenge homophobia as a straight woman. You know, so it did take me a while. but I think community organisations, we have a lot of them in this country, and they play really important roles in our society. And I think it's really important that we actually look at the potential of those spaces for developing our society and also how we can take some of the models that they're using into other spaces. Like I imagine, you know, the queer straight alliances in schools are in effect the same thing as, for me, that lesbian visibility, that lesbian caucus. And just by being there, enable people to be able to be there. And I think, so that's that point I wanted to make. Also, I worked in youth health for a while. And because another thing in Murray's report is looking around services for young people. And the importance of the professionals having the right knowledge. And it was, you know, youth health services, that was the second one in the country, the one I set up. But now they're, even though, of course, they're having funding struggles increasingly, but there are quite a few of them around the country, and they are a very important space, that they're confidential, non-judgmental services with peer support programs. However, you can't assume that even within that space, people are going to get it, that people are going to understand queer realities, that I had ongoing dramas when I was there with, tragically, with our mana whenua representative, who every time she came to the centre would rip down the queer visibility posters and they'd suddenly be gone. When I went and looked around, so I had to continually replace them. Thank you, AIDS Foundation. And so that was a real tension. And those posters were part of providing that space of saying, yes, we know you're here. You can talk to us. And another, the peer support workers would quite often, we had quite early on the discussions about, is it okay to say, that's so gay? And they were like, well, you know, it's just language. It doesn't mean anything. I was like, okay. So right now you're telling me you're straight and I'm walking in here questioning my sexuality and I hear you say that. Am I welcome? And they got it. But unless somebody's got that analysis to have that conversation, it would just keep going, and those spaces would not be safe. As I can imagine, many schools are not safe, and many youth organisations are not safe, because you can't guarantee at the moment that there is the training for the social workers or for the nurses or for the doctors or for the school teachers to ensure and to know what is safe and what isn't. Which was another point in Murray's research. Very handily. And another point that he's making, which is around, you know, bullying is one factor, isolation is another, invisibility is another. And I can speak to that too from my experience of also of having come out and then going and living in a culture where I didn't have a community and I wasn't out. And how, the first time I left that culture after being there for a year and I saw somebody and they spotted me. And like, I skipped for about 100 meters after they'd spotted me because it was so amazing to be seen after a year of not being seen. And these things that they sound like, you know, they're one word in a report, or actually you wrote a few paragraphs, but you know, like you can just say invisibility is a problem. But actually, unless we think about what that means and how profound that is, not to see yourself reflected or not to see a diversity reflected to give you a space of choice of being, then we're not going to be able to make a difference, and our young people are going to continue to really struggle. Another point which is linking to that is that the struggle over diversity within our own communities. Okay. And we see that on many levels. We see that around a tension of ethnicity and sexuality, and people being us still struggling, I think, at times to have spaces where people are able to be themselves and fully in their cultural identity and fully within their sexual orientation or gender identity. And that for me is a space that I hope we can work much harder to create, because they're going to be beautiful, beautiful spaces. But I'm yet to see them very often, and I think it's a tragic, tragic thing if people feel as if they have to choose. And I don't think that's just the fault. If you take the example of the Pacific groups that were marching and protesting against marriage equality, I don't think it's just their fault that there's that tension. I think there is something, and I say this as a Palangi Pākehā woman who has a responsibility around that. So I think, and also obviously in terms of, I certainly think from when I first came out to now, we've made progress, and that's for me not as the group affected, but in terms of integration and understanding of inclusion of gender diversity and intersex analysis and understanding within the, you know, the dominant gay lesbian cultures, but we still need to acknowledge, I think, that the gay lesbian cultures are still dominant, and we need to give up a bit of that power and a bit of that space to allow others to be and create more spaces so that we have the full beauty of our communities more readily at hand. I feel like, so in terms of my job now in Parliament, obviously I think that's a really key space in terms of legislative change that needs to be done. Not being in government, we don't have the power to impact directly around policy, and there's a lot of policy work I think that needs to be done, particularly in relation to schools, but I also think within the health sector, and supporting community organisations and that diversity, understanding and awareness. Kevin Haig and I are looking at trying to audit Eero's reviews of schools, because they do need to be ensuring that schools have anti-gay bullying policies, and they're ticking them off, but we're wanting to make sure that they check that people know they've got those policies, not just that the policy exists, as we suspect may be the case. And there's a huge, obviously, amount of work to be done in terms of changing the Human Rights Act to ensure that gender identity is a basis for non-discrimination. We need to be ensuring that our health system actually enables people to transition. And I would love to see us do what's happened in Argentina, where people, and though we do need to acknowledge that yesterday the passport office made a world-leading change in terms of people being able to change their gender identity, which is amazing and great progress. But we could do what Argentina did, and their parliament voted unanimously to enable people to choose themselves. How radical is that? What their gender identity is. No doctors, no lawyers involved. None of them needed. Actually, trusting people may know themselves. Crazy concept, and how fabulous that would be to see in our laws. And I would also personally like to see, quite intrigued by the law that went through in the US this year, making it illegal for religious groups to try and re-educate people out of being gay. Because I know that's happening here. I've had a friend who's been through one of those courses, thankfully met a girlfriend in the course. But those kind of courses cost lives, and I do not believe they should be allowed. So there is a huge amount of work to do. And one of the other, I think, final points to make before I go on too long, that's in Murray's report, is also, I think, to be really mindful of, which is why I'm so pleased this panel is happening, that there's a temptation that as we make progress in terms of law reform, for people then to assume that everything's okay and to think that homophobia's suddenly gone because we've got the legal changes and, well, you know, society's accepted that, so we don't need to be conscious. We don't need to change our systems or our policies anymore. And that is very clearly and absolutely not true. So it's really great to be able to be having these two conversations at once, and I'm really so pleased that Queer Avengers has organised this. So thank you.
We've got to do this money thing again, so I'm going to hand around these things. Some of you have given as much as you can, and that's fine, but that we still have only paid probably a third of the costs of the conference, I think. So I'm just going to pass these around and make sure they circulate.
Yes, I mean, conference has been very cheap. We've tried to do this as cheap as possible to make it as accessible as possible. And so I'd just like to take the opportunity now to thank all the volunteers for doing all the work. You know, the exhausting amount of hours, sleepless nights, and all of the volunteer work that we've managed to pull all of this together and have such a fabulous event. So thank you all for that. So a round of applause for the volunteers, please. All right, our last panel speaker is Nigel Studdard. Now, Nigel's come here this weekend and joined us in conference. We've brought him down from Northland. So Nigel is a teacher who's been sacked from Northland's Pompalia College for standing up against homophobia. Now, I think it's our duty as, for me, especially as a queer person, to stand up and support people like Nigel and the other panel members and even yourselves. You know, we do need to stand up and look after each other, especially when we're the ones that are being attacked. And we are the ones that need to be leading the fight for acceptance and equality, and I am absolutely privileged that I've been able to help in some regard to that. But I really do want to thank all of you to have been a part of that. It's not just us that are doing the work, it's you that are doing the work. It's the discourse that you are having with your family, your friends and your whānau, and getting that out into the community that is really making the difference. It's not just us. So please don't take what we're doing as the work. You're doing the work, all right? So, but we do need to make sure we are standing up and supporting people like Nigel. Nigel said at the time, obviously he felt really upset that he'd lost his job, but he couldn't have done anything else. And every time he gets another message, it really confirms what he did was the right thing. The amount of support people have put in behind Nigel was phenomenal. And the discussions I've had with Nigel has been really a true testament to who we are as people, who we are as New Zealanders, and who we are to make sure that we do support these people. So it's my privilege to have him as our honoured guest during conference and for me to introduce Nigel Stutter.
Thanks, Rawa, and it's lovely to be here, and thank you all so much for all the support that you've given to me. I think what's really important here is homophobia is not a gay, lesbian, transgender problem. It's everybody's problem. It's prejudice. Prejudice is everybody's problem. Now, I'm a straight guy. I've got four kids. I'm married. My partner's a wonderful lady. She's a midwife. She works with families that are going through challenges. What I see in schools, I was really shocked at Pompeo Catholic College, really shocked. I didn't really think there was a problem. As a teacher, I thought my students were safe, I thought they were happy. That was certainly the impression that I was getting until we get a polarizing event. Now, what polarized the students in that school was a newsletter that was written by the principal. That newsletter was entitled Keeping Marriage Sacred, and I'm sure some of you will have read that. Has everybody read that? Has everybody seen that newsletter? I'd encourage you to read through it. It was a newsletter entitled Keeping Marriage Sacred. It's a Catholic school. I understand it's a Catholic school. I'm not a Catholic. I am a Christian. I teach in a Catholic school. Used to teach in a Catholic school. That newsletter went one step beyond what is accepted Catholic doctrine. Accepted Catholic doctrine is that gay marriage is not acceptable. That newsletter went one step beyond that. It went to a step that I found, the first time I read it, to just be offensive. I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't really put my finger on it. My daughters could when they read it. What it said was that it contended that gay parents would be more possessive and in some way lesser parents than heterosexual parents. That meant that students in my classroom would be lesser parents if they were gay. It meant that if they had parents that were gay, in some way they were lesser parents. Now, I knew that to be an absolute untruth and fundamentally wrong. I knew that because already seen the research on this. That research is evident in proving that it's absolutely untrue. Gay parents are equally as good, if not better, than heterosexual parents. There is no evidence to prove the contrary that I've seen, and I'm a scientist, it's my background. So I think it's really important that we establish that as a fact, and I think what you're doing with this conference and what you're doing in supporting the Marriage Amendment Bill is really vital to New Zealand. Something else that I think is really important in terms of looking at homophobia and what's going on is when we see the adverts on television. Now, I'm fairly new to New Zealand. I've been here for 5 years. Love the country, really enjoying it. But I see adverts on television that talk about man-troll. I don't know what that is. Is that different to girl-troll? What sort of troll are we talking about? You know, really, there is such a narrow definition of what a bloke is in New Zealand. I think it needs to be broadened, you know? Speaking, again, from a scientific perspective, there are not two genders. There is a whole spectrum right across the board of gender identity. And every gender identity is just as valid as any other. And that is something that needs to be accepted by society and certainly something that should never be prejudiced against. So that was the one thing that really got my goat. As a family, we sit down over breakfast, we sit down over dinner, and we talk about things. So my wife and I sat down with our two daughters and we were talking about the school newsletter. Now, in a school newsletter, I don't know about you, but I sort of expect to see things like George did really well at hockey, or, you know, whoever did great at getting a scholarship to Victoria University. Yay, well done. I don't really expect to see keeping marriage sacred in a school newsletter. Perhaps I should in a Catholic school newsletter. I certainly don't expect to see prejudice in a school newsletter. I certainly don't, in a school that I teach, want somebody representing that school. All right, they're saying it's their own opinion, but when you put it on school letterhead and you bash it out to every parent, what you're saying is this is the school community and this is the attitude of the school community. As a teacher, I was really offended by that. My daughters and my wife were really offended by that, because that is not the way that we feel. And that is not the way the majority of the teachers in that school feel. I talked to many of the teachers after I was suspended. Many of them contacted me with support. Most of them were really worried about coming forward and saying anything. And I think something that really needs to be worked on by the PPTA, and I'd ask the PPTA to really look at this, and Eero as well, is that the atmosphere in schools and the authoritarian atmosphere. We talk a lot about the divide between teachers and students and how we must maintain a power dimension between the two. Yeah? I'm the teacher, I stand at the front, you guys sit down there, I tell you the way the world works. It doesn't work like that. I learn as much from all of my students, probably more than I teach them. When I teach, I walk around a classroom. It seems really odd to me standing at the front of a building. I'm much more comfortable wandering around and talking to people. I think that mutual respect is what needs to happen in schools. Schools need to become open places, not just in terms of sexual identity, but in terms of valuing the students' opinions, giving them the right to have those opinions. Now, in the email that I got back from the principal, after I wrote him an email pretty much as soon as I'd read the newsletter and had a chat with it with my family. And I said, you know, I think you need to withdraw this. This will offend an awful lot of the national tolerant community, let alone the gay, lesbian and transgender community. He came back to me and said, this is my opinion and I want to encourage people to debate the issues around marriage. We encouraged debate, didn't we? Unfortunately, I don't think it encouraged the sort of debate that he was looking for. In terms of what he's done to me and the board that supported it, what they've tried to do is shut down that debate. And the reason that I stood behind the students when the students wanted to have a protest and wear rainbow ribbons, we're not talking about throwing rocks here. We're not talking about burning the school down. We're talking about wearing a rainbow ribbon, yeah? Bit like wearing a daffodil, wearing a poppy, wearing a conscience ribbon for breast cancer. I support that. I think kids that have a social conscience are the future of any country, and you shut that down at your peril. We need to encourage our kids to have a conscience. We need to encourage our kids to debate, to form their own opinions, not just go with what we tell them, because we're not always right. So we need to have that debate. We need to encourage our children to debate and our students to debate. And we should expect that that's what teachers do in a classroom. Even when I'm teaching science, I don't teach it as an absolute fact. Because I don't know if you all remember when you were at school, but science has changed, yeah? The facts are not the same anymore. Facts are the world as we understand it now. In 20 years, that world is very different. So I think it's very important that we encourage debate. I think it's very important that schools are places that encourage debate. Now, there's been a lot of talk about professional development for teachers. I'd like to go one step before that, and above that, and I'd like to propose professional development for principals and for senior management teams. My experience of teachers is they're pretty good, actually. You know, if you're a good teacher, you enjoy teaching, you stay in a classroom, because you've got great behaviour control and you get on really well with the kids and you take great pleasure in seeing the development of those students. If you're not such a good teacher, you're probably going to go off and I'm not trying to insult everybody who does it, but you're going to go off and you're going to do higher degrees and you're going to get senior management positions and you might end up a principal. I'm not saying all of them have got bad behaviour management and they don't have that mutual relationship with kids, but certainly some of them possibly have a few problems, in my opinion. I think we need to get in there at the top, and I think Iro needs to get in there at the top of schools and the senior management team, and it needs to make damn sure that those schools are safe for everybody. Certainly in my classroom, I would not really ever look around the classroom and think, so-and-so is Maori, so-and-so is Pākehā, so-and-so is Pacifica. Oh, he might be gay, she might be a lesbian. I just taught kids, yeah? They were all the same. My classrooms were emotionally safe places for people to be. They could say what they liked. I would cut students some slack. You know, we don't sweat the small stuff. We're there to actually help students, to help them form their own opinions. And I think the one message that I'd like everybody to take home from this is homophobia does exist in New Zealand. It's out there. I was really shocked when I saw it. I've spent most of my life, a little bit about me, I started life as a cardiac research associate, doing a PhD in Liverpool, built a boat, took off to sea for 25 years. I decided academia wasn't for me. I then retired and then went into teaching because I needed to keep my brain active. It wasn't good for me to be doing nothing. I thought homophobia and those sort of prejudices were gone. But, you know, I'm a straight guy. I lead a fairly normal life. And it's a bit like when people say to me, oh, you know, Nigel, do you know that there's lots of drugs and everything going on here? Because I'm not involved in it. I don't see it. When you become involved in it, the messages that I've had from other students and other teachers saying thank you for just saying something, because we're all too afraid to stand up and say something, those messages are heartfelt. And it is so vital what you're doing, so vital that you stand up and say something, because there are so many people out there that need to hear it. Thank you very much.
I'm quite emotional actually about all of that, and thank you very much for coming down and joining us, Nigel. The next phase is really handing over to you and asking the questions of the panellists. We do ask that your questions are concise and to the point, and we do ask that you're polite and respectful of other people. After all, that's what we're here for, is to be respectful and to be asking for equality. So we need to do that within our own ranks as well. So I have Mervyn down here. He's got the microphone, and I'll do the standing. I'll do the, making sure that you guys are doing your job and these guys are doing their job. We've got a microphone for the panellists here, so I'll hand it over. And Mervyn, is yours on? And I will just take speaking order as well, so I'll go with Ian first.
Yep. Thanks for that, everyone. I just have a question for Nigel. I liked what you said about that the problem is at the top, and, like, you know, with Queer Avengers, we've got the Queer Our Schools campaign. There are other similar related things around, like the Schools Out and the Queer Straight Alliances. And I think tomorrow it would be good to have some discussion about how to move forward with school stuff, so it would be good to have your input. But I just wanted to ask about, I know you're still doing a grievance process with the board, so I wanted to ask about that and if there's anything we can do to support that.
First of all, I'd just like to say thanks for all the support you've done again. It's just been amazing. You know, I mean, there was a point there, I was lying in bed when I got back from doing close-up, you know, and we were sort of, my wife and I were lying there at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, so I'd driven back from Auckland, and I was thinking, oh, what have I done? You know? How did we end up doing this? And then, you know, we're sitting there and it's like, well, glad I did. And that night,
I worked till about 3:30 in the morning. I got up and I sat down on my computer and I answered all the messages of support I could. By 3:30, I was sort of running out of steam. So many messages were coming in on Facebook from everybody in support. So what you've been doing is fantastic, first of all. And I would say that to you, to Tabby, to everybody that's really got involved with those Facebook groups. You know, now with social media, things happen so much faster. The time frame has gone from a press date to maybe a week or two, you know, and things when things happen, to 4 or 5 minutes as things explode. And I think that continued presence is really important. So I thank you very much for that. What more can you do? Where I'm at with the process now, just to sort of bring you up to date, we have a mediation hearing scheduled for the 12th, when hopefully I'll be able to get a few more answers out of the board. I mean, those of you that have seen my Facebook page and been following it, you'll see that even when the Catholic media has asked the school questions and asked the board questions, they've refused to answer them. So they're basically sticking their head in the sand and they're not coming back with an answer. And I'd encourage all journalists to go to the school and try and get the other side of the story, because I'd love to hear it. I really would. So I would love to have the school. I'm looking forward to the school of that mediation hearing. Unfortunately, that mediation hearing is absolutely confidential. So I cannot give any form of release out about that hearing. And the results of those mediation hearings generally are confidential as well. If it goes beyond that stage, then, and I will be seeking reinstatement at that hearing, if it goes beyond that stage, it goes to the employment tribunal, and then it's not confidential, then I can actually hopefully get some answers to the questions. But I think the next stage is mediation, and then we'll go on from there. But I think keeping up the pressure on the board is really important. Those letters, I mean, the number of parents who've written letters to the board, I've requested all of that information under the Information Act so that I can read that and the minutes of the board meeting. But what you've done so far, brilliant. Please just keep it up. Let's keep the pressure on.
Moving just over here to your left. Just right behind you.
I think popular culture is really, well, influential, among other things. So just for example, to the teachers, is there any sort of evidence, anecdotal evidence of the influence of programs like Glee having out characters and other programs like that? To out gay couples?
I doubt it. And by saying that, you know, there has been societal change over the last X number of years, but the behaviours are still the behaviours are still the behaviours. And that's what we're talking about here, and why actually the need for going back to Eero and, you know, all of that garbage needs to happen. That is, cultures need to be changed from the top within those organisations.
Was your question directed in terms of has the attitude of the students changed or the teachers and the staff? Students, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, one thing I'd say about the students at the school that I was teaching at Pompelia is there was not really that I saw at all, and I believe that was also from Zach Trapp. I don't know if you saw the close-up, but Zach was also on there, an ex-student. And yes, you're going to get issues in a school. As with any difference in any teenager, you'll get it. But in general, I think what's happening with popular culture and the fact that now you see a lot of out individuals in popular culture, I think it's much more accepted. And certainly the support I've received from all the students in the school has been amazing. And they really do support. I mean, I had a message from a gay student in the school, and what she said to me was, you know, I just feel so supported by everybody here. It's wonderful, except for a certain individual. So it's pretty cool. I think it is working, yeah. But it's not changing the 55, 60-year-old people at the top who really aren't probably not watching it either.
Kevin?
I kind of had a half question, half comment about the impact of your struggle, Nigel, and thank you for pursuing this and making a big deal out of it and not just like taking it lying down in terms of all these other schools and the principals and the senior staff that have these incredibly backwards views, that as a result of your ability, your willingness to stand up and be seen and be heard and to fight dismissal on the basis of I refuse to accept discrimination, on other schools, like, for being, will they now, do you think, will there be schools now, do you think, that will be too afraid to be openly bigoted as a result of your challenge? And I know that's a tough question. I was involved a few years ago in a campaign in Dunedin about schools that refuse to allow same-sex couples to attend their school balls. And yes, ridiculous, and openly overt about it, like quite absurd. We made a big deal. We picked a couple of schools, and we put it through the papers, and we put it on the streets, and we put it in Dunedin TV, and we openly shamed them. And the next year, we got no complaints. And I just wanted to know your feelings on that.
I do think, yeah, it's certainly made a difference. I have a feeling that we've got different schools where we've got different issues. Okay, I think if you're in a large school where you've got a larger community, then probably you've already got more pressure on those senior staff to be more inclusive. I think where you've got a faith-based school, I mean, remember I was teaching in a Catholic school, you've got a mountain of Catholic doctrine that is sitting there. But I'm not anti-Catholic, surprisingly enough. Even after all this, I'm not anti-Catholic. I think that the values, if that are espoused by Catholic schools, those Marist values, one of them is tolerance. Well, come on, guys, show it. And I think they need to be held up to their own value system and made to obey that value system. Don't forget, these Catholic schools are integrated schools. My salary as a teacher was paid by you guys, not by the Catholic Church, okay? Yes, I agree to uphold the special character of that school when I go and work there. That means that I don't openly oppose the Catholic Church's viewpoints. In other words, I would not, as a teacher, I'm sacked now, I can, I would not, as a teacher, stand up and say, I support gay marriage, you know, come on, let's get it there, let's get it sorted. That would not be appropriate. But there is nothing that I have read in Catholic doctrine that says that gay parents are lesser parents than the other parent. What amused me was when the one response I did read from the school, where it said that, you know, the school always welcomes gay parents and gay students. They're like any other student in the school, we welcome them into the school. It's not an exact quote, so please read the exact quote if you want to quote it. But at the same time, we're saying that, you know, the principal is saying that, so in my interpretation, that gay parents are lesser parents. Well, that's a bit like me inviting you around for dinner. I sit down and have dinner with all my friends in the living room, and I kick you out in the kitchen and say, here's your plate. You know, it's not inclusiveness. Has it made a difference? I hope so, because this is 2012. We still need to be fighting these battles, but I thought we eliminated a lot of this 50 years ago. And I'm shocked that we're fighting these battles now. One good thing I would say about New Zealand, and I've seen so far, and I thought it was really significant where we met last night, to be meeting in the upper chamber that doesn't exist. Great. Isn't that fantastic? You know, means you guys can change things. And you can change them quite quickly. And I take my hat off to everybody who was speaking last night, who's sticking their own neck out. And that's you, Jan. That's everybody speaking last night to do that. And Lisa as well. It's amazing, because they are sticking their neck out and they continue to need your support to do it. So well done, guys.
Cassie.
And remembering, is it going?
Yep.
No, there we go. Going back to the big schools which have diversity already, a hell of a lot of schools are in one school towns in rural New Zealand which are very unsafe places for anybody who is different. And talking about the one that I was at, actually 90% of the kids were great. It wasn't an issue for 90% of the parents. Having an out gay teacher in the town was not an issue. But the 10% can make it really unhealthy and really threatening. And it's in those sorts of places that I, you know, even today, people who are thought to be gay or known to be gay still get a hard time.
I just, you know, not to be too depressing, but also to note that the homophobic bullying that happened at Hutt Valley High, which was absolutely extreme, raping of students and homophobic bullying, happened incredibly recently, and the Ombudsman's report of that violence did not even consider homophobia. So actually that is also part of the picture that we're dealing with. Unless you're connected and listening to the issues or knowing it, then actually it doesn't come into people's minds. That's the Ombudsman. It was a, you know, it was clearly homophobic to anyone who might have any understanding.
And of course that wasn't the only case. A few years ago up in the East Coast, and it was exactly the same sort of situation of rape of a student by other students. It can't be anything else but what it was.
But I think that these conflicts and struggles do have an impact. And I'm confident that what Nigel's is having, that impact of making other schools a bit more careful. I have no doubt at all that being public and making a fuss has a huge impact. And I think it's that impact that you can see appreciated here. We don't underestimate the courage that takes, but we also have got to make a fuss and make a struggle. It's not actually enough to have sensible opinions and to talk to opinion leaders. It's not enough to argue with politicians. It's not enough to change laws. We have got to, in different ways, duplicate the kinds of public struggles that Nigel has. Now, it won't be the same way because we're not going to lose our job on this one, probably. But, it's a matter of demonstrations. It's a matter of pickets. It's a matter of seeing abuses and standing up against them and making a fuss. It's a matter of making it too embarrassing to fuck us over.
Okay, I've got five people on the list at the moment, so I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. And we'll probably wrap up questions about not long after 1:30. So.
Can I just add one thing to that role before we finish? I think there's two things that need to be done. First of all, I think what the Queer Avengers are doing is vital. And I think in those small rural towns, as we were talking the other day on Facebook, I think what's really critical is that you get an organisation. If you can't get it into the school, and believe me, Sydney tried with Pompeo and he didn't get a lot of success. It's difficult to get it into the school. Get it into the town around the school so that you can actually do it for 2 or 3 schools in that area. That's one thing that needs to be done because those kids need that support. They need to know somebody's there for them, you know. I wish I was back at Pompeo because the kids would know they could come and talk to me. It's not going to happen, I doubt very much, but that's what it needs. It needs somebody they can go to. The second thing we need to do is we need to get people going around the schools and talking about it. Going to the staff meetings, talking to the staff, explaining that this is a problem. Getting over that issue, you know, I mean, I think it was Jan who said it, there's no homosexuality in this school, you know? Come on, guys, are you serious? In this day and age, are you really going with that belief? People need educating. They need to understand that. The staff and the senior management, especially the senior management, need to take that on board.
Thank you. That's a really interesting question. My response to that would be about education, really, and that's the kind of... it's about education of us, even to the extent of us, you know, looking at our own homophobia and transphobia. But one of the things that we're doing is developing a diversity training kit. I mean, a number of people have talked about that. So we're doing that for our own delegates and our union organisers because they don't realise that they are being homophobic, and that may be, you know, covert or it's underneath. You know, people just, it's not very clear. So I think you really have to keep on, and Jan made the point that just don't accept that we've got, you know, just because we've got items signed off that you know, we've done everything. We just have to keep on with this education, and that's why I think people like, I mean, Marnie Bruce Mitchell stuff that she's doing is fantastic, and it really does push the boundaries.
Also echoing that around the education, and it's one of another thing within Refuge, that part of the training of the people working in Refuge is around homophobia. And for me, it's also about a human rights analysis. And actually, I think we need to do more work in the country in terms of actually encouraging and giving people the opportunity to think about what are human rights. And what does that mean? Because I believe, you know, oppressions are linked. But people, there aren't many spaces in our society for people to get to think about that and think about how their own experience of the world is impacted by the oppression that affects them directly or the oppression of other people and what that means for them. And so I think there's that, but there's, I mean, obviously activism's another thing. You know, education's one thing, but we also need structural change, and we need to be organising, and that stuff only happens with organising. So yay, Queer Avengers.
And it really is a structural thing. At the moment, we're having treaty settlements happening. Just read the newspaper letters. The absolute vein of racist, very thinly veiled. You don't have to go very far out in society to find misogynists who are happy to parade their you know, prejudices all the time. That is, there's a whole heap of groups who are not your white heterosexual male who actually suffer varying forms, despite the fact that discrimination on all sorts of grounds has been outlawed. And when we look at the American election just recently, you know, they had voter registration years ago. But look what's happening.
I think there's one thing we should expect from schools in terms of what you're saying to make sure that doesn't happen. And that is that school leadership should be standing up and making damn sure it doesn't happen and modelling behaviour that shows that it doesn't happen. We should not expect that any form of school leadership encourages the other side of that viewpoint. So the role models that our kids see in schools should be role models that are tolerant, should be role models that are open to diversity. And I think that's something in terms of teacher education that really needs to be there. We need to stop really thinking of it just in terms of culture. We need to think about it in a much broader scope. But we need to make sure that, and I would call on Iro to do this in the Ministry of Education, they should be making sure our kids are safe in school. And that means that educational leadership should be modelling that and making sure that their schools are safe.
Shelley.
Don't work for that, then we're letting ourselves and our country and our people down. And that's something I'm going to be responsible for.
I would agree with you there, Shelley. I think really what's important, you know, you would feel really comfortable with the kids at Pompeo Catholic College. They're lovely kids. It was the kids that were really supporting this. And I think that's something we need to understand. In many cases, it's not the kids that are the issue. And it's that sort of middle ground of the middle age to a certain extent. And they're the people we need to be addressing. Yes, we do get homophobia with kids and the bullying. But if they're in an atmosphere where that's unacceptable and their peers see that as unacceptable, it isn't going to happen. If it's seen as where it's acceptable, I mean, there was a comment that I read on the report that was written to the board about me, which was, I left it to the school leadership to sort out this problem about the demonstration. You know, the student leadership. So that's effectively saying that the student leadership is going to encourage this to go away. And, you know, one of the students had a go at the girl that set up the protest. Now, it's that sort of modelling that does the damage. What we really need is to be encouraging those kids and saying, you know, what you are as a teenager, as a year 10, as a year 11 student, by doing something like this, you have my respect. You're an admirable individual. You may only be 14, 15, 16, but hey, you've got a social conscience that belongs to somebody who should be in Parliament. So well done.
Thomas. We are asking that maybe if you can speak into the microphone because some of us can't hear.
So hi, I'm a youth worker as well. And something I've noticed with my young people is that a lot of them are still really, really scared. And so while the issue has kind of gotten better, the big problem I see is that even though the issue's gotten better, the majority, which is all good, is silent. And that's the loud minority, which is hating on everyone, that they hear. And so I have a youth, you know, a gay-identifying youth in Kapiti, who's really scared to come out, even though he has no reason to be that way. You know, he's got such a positive support system, but it's that really loud minority that really scares him, and he's worried that it's going to ruin his chances of getting through high school. So it's just being, you know, the loud majority rather than the silent majority supporting real quietly. We've got to, like, actually say, hey, you know, this is an issue and we've got to talk about it. So just kind of upping that because everyone's said that.
Okay, over here.
Probably didn't speak loud enough. As a teacher, I'm quite used to projecting. Hutt Valley High School has a bit of a history of this because in the 90s they had a number of teachers who were attacked, I believe if my memory serves me correctly, by principal. And in fact the PPTA, Nigel, ought to have that information and you ought to be able to look at what actually happened. I worked in a school further up the valley with a Salvation Army principal who had been opposed to the homosexual law reform bill, but in fact it was a number of gay staff. We had a number of gay staff at the school, and the staff was solidly behind and demanded that a statement was put out by the school supporting the teachers who were being penalised at Hutt Valley High School. And I think that's something that probably needs to be able to be done in your case, to have other schools, the principals, the board of trustees of other schools to come out and make a statement and say, this is unacceptable. And I think it's really important not to put all schools into the same category. There are liberal schools in New Zealand who are supportive and do provide as not a totally safe, but a much, much safer school. And it's not just country schools or schools in small regions that suffer from this. In Wellington, there are a number of schools who have probably anti-prejudice policies, anti-bullying, and yet a number of those students find their way to the school I currently teach at because they are bullied. They don't stay at their school. So it's not good enough, PPTA, for Aero to tick boxes, that there's a policy. It's not good enough for a school to be passed because it's got a policy. It's actually got to look at real practice. And that's much harder to do. It means they've really got to talk to the students and the staff as to what really goes on, because there often is a mismatch between the leadership and of the school and the teachers and the students. I also want to make a point to Nigel that I don't know what the STA, the Board of Trustees organisation, you've got a staff rep on your board. What have they called in the STA? They should be looking at that, because I think it's important to challenge that. And I think we need to be aware that charter schools, partnership schools they're called, are a real threat for New Zealand. It's a policy of this government. And they are schools who don't have to follow the curriculum, don't have to employ qualified teachers, won't be required to have anti-bullying policies. They're not going to be inspected, I suspect, by Aero. So what's going to happen there? And the thing is that we need to fight the establishment of those schools now, before they're in place, rather than try and do a rearguard fight after they're in place. And I don't care if it's a church school or a non-church charter school that's being set up. They should be stopped. We want quality state education, not this other nonsense.
I still have a few hands up, but I will have to cut off at 8:30, so I will try to get through you all, so if you can be quick. Sorry? Okay, thank you.
I just have a quick statement. I'm an early childhood teacher, and I often see children having some interesting views on sexuality. Their view of sexuality is formed quite early, as young as sort of 2 years old. And I believe personally that this is due to media and other things that they see in society. I don't think that the queer community is visible enough to children, and they don't see other forms of sexuality enough, and so they form these views of society that are male and female, and then that evolves into homophobia. So I suppose what I'm saying is that high school is a great place to be doing education about sexuality, but also primary and early childhood should probably have that too, as well as, I don't know what you would do about the media, but restricting or altering advertisements to not be so heteronormative and damaging to children's views of sexuality.
I blame Disney. My little sister seen photos of me and my partner, and she said, "Why are you kissing the other man?" You know, she's so used to princes and princesses. So, yeah, I blame Disney. But we have right over here.
Hi, I was trying to think in terms of structural solutions for these things, because, I mean, what we need is a kind of education about queer sexuality institutionalised in schools and, you know, stuff institutionalised in healthcare. I mean, we're not going to get it with this government. You've got the National Party, who's downright hostile to some queer issues, and then the Labour Party, who are, you know, they're okay on some, but largely indifferent on others. I mean, I've admired the work that parties like the Greens have done over the past couple of years, although I kind of wonder what would happen if the Greens became a dominant party. I suspect there'd be kind of a more centrist move. So under the system of MMP, I don't really think that getting change is going to work particularly fast. I was kind of wondering what people thought about potential for more further electoral reform, so we can get a more proportional system and enable, you know, queer positive policy. What?
I like that idea.
Actually, I don't know about that, I think politicians do what people make them do. So, you know, not to fob it off and say, no, we're not responsible, because we need to be. And I certainly will, you know, do what I can, try and do what I can to claim that. But it is, I mean, I think regardless of the system, it comes back to community organising. It comes back to the stuff that you're good at. So doing more of it.
And I'm just going to pick up in response to that about charter schools, because I think it's actually about noise. And I think there is an opportunity to make noise that we have to make and respond on charter schools, which is such a dangerous thing. So there are submissions, and even though the parliamentary process we feel very disillusioned by at the moment, noise is really important, and activism, and that does make a difference. So I haven't answered your question, but I did want to pick up the point about the charter schools and responding on that.
And although MMP isn't perfect, I think the visibility of out gay and lesbian MPs, the number of women in Parliament. Now, in terms of society changing, the face of who rules us is changing. And to actually get any of them to do anything is what, you know, we've got to make them do it.
I'd actually say it's moving quite quickly in New Zealand. You know, I'd take my hat off to New Zealand in terms of what it's achieved. I know it's never going to move fast enough, and it's a shame that we can't make it move quicker. But I do think you've got some incredible progress going on. I think what's really important is to celebrate that progress, normalise that progress, so that the general population of New Zealand, which I think is very largely supportive, sees it as progress that's happening and then gets on board and moves with it. If you emphasise the positive, people will follow you. And I think if you can do that in the communities, you'll go a long way with it. So I think it's going well, and I would keep pushing hard. So good luck with it.
And final question.
Hey, I'll try and make it quick. So we've talked a lot about language tonight, and I do research and conversation analysis, so I think language is really important. One safe space rule is using gender-neutral language. So I was wondering if the PVTA could push for having that kind of rule institutionalized, like having a teacher having to use my partner, even if they're a straight person.
Yeah, I don't think I can speak for the union on this, because I haven't got that brief. But, I mean, the issue you're talking about is one of the quality of initial teacher education. The sort of issue you're talking about is the sort of school leadership that happens. And us trying to get into schools to say you need to challenge that's gay, a number of schools are welcoming. But, you know, there is that view of what the hell are you all bleating on about? There's nothing wrong with our place. I'm not sexist. I'm not racist. I'm not homophobic. I just talk about my wife and kids all the time. But it happens amongst our colleagues. I mean, I remember talking to someone who was a teaching colleague a while ago about, he said, oh, have you got a partner? I said, yeah, Dominic. And he said, Dominic? And I said, Dominic. And he said, oh, you gay. You know, assumptions are assumptions.
I think, certainly from my perspective and the way that I would talk to my students, I think if you show your students respect, you get that respect back. And it's not, I mean, again, I would say don't sweat the small stuff. You know, I know, I understand where you're coming from in terms of language, but I think what's really important is that respect. And if they feel safe in your classroom and they feel respected, then the language becomes far less of an issue, because it's a warm, encompassing feeling. And I think that's what we're trying to generate in classrooms. I think another issue that is hard to deal with, and I think it's another one that the government will need to look at, but I doubt very much it'll be this government, is the whole local boards thing, where basically you've got a board controlling a school. And certainly what I saw, where you've got basically a board that has very little power, because we've got four proprietors representatives from the Catholic Church, we've got four parent representatives who don't want to jeopardize their own kids in the school. So whilst I think it's a terrific initiative to have local control, I'm very much for devolved government, I think it's a great idea, you need to actually put structures in place to make sure that it's got some teeth, because otherwise it just becomes a puppet that can be moved by the principal or by somebody else. So I think there's a few things to consider there.
I really like your question. I'm just going to respond by saying somebody said it, that we need to live by assume nothing, which is the words of Rebecca Swan in that book called Assume Nothing. And so that's a challenge to us all, but it's a challenge we can throw out to others too, and live by assume nothing.
Okay, thank you, panel. I guess we'll just maybe give you the opportunity to have any final remarks. Start with Bill.
I just want to say that I think that society and institutions, they're uneven. There are pockets which are more homophobic and pockets which are less. But on the whole, our governments, our schools, our culture reflects us, reflects the population. And it's only by changing that that we can change the institutions, that ultimately the little fiddling is necessary, but on its own it's not the point. It's the question of using the little fiddling as a lever for massive change. The example that I use all the time is that the 85-86 homosexual law reform about the decriminalisation of homosexuality was not really about the decriminalisation of homosexuality at all. It was about a minor little cultural revolution in New Zealand. And that little reform was the opportunity for it. What was important was the screaming rage of thousands of gay men and women in New Zealand and their supporters that said, enough, we've got to change things. It was the radical activism which people who weren't very radical or very activist felt necessary to do in all the circumstances. And what we've got to do is, yes, try to influence this board or this decision or that decision, but as much as possible, use those opportunities as levers for a much larger cultural change which is necessary.
I think I'm going to leave you just with a couple of words. Make noise and keep making noise. The squeaky hinge gets the oil. Just get out there and make that noise.
And it's also very evident that there are a number of organisations across the whole of society who are working for the change, even if they're not visible.
Ditto.
Nice. For me, that obviously tonight I've heard, you know, that change, we've made progress in certain areas, and at the base there's a certain kind of change happening, but it's not fast enough. There's a lot more to be done, and thinking it's all done is actually just going to allow what's wrong to feed and grow. So I've been really thankful for this conversation in terms of, I guess, sharpening my thinking and focus, and I look forward to hopefully having a chance to be able to respond to your rage and do what I can in the place where I work. But loving the work that you're all doing to, you know, to push more to happen.
And I guess my final remarks on this issue is that I'm very glad that we've actually had this discussion. It's really important. It was actually a touching story that we had at the start of our public meetings, well, towards the beginning. It was really sad, moving and touching, that really drove home that we really needed to make sure we had this discussion, because marriage equality has raised this discussion. There are people out there at home who are reading the forums, the blogs, and all of that, and who are struggling with the homophobia that this naturally occurs, and we need to make sure we're there for them as well. You know, these people are behind a screen, they're not here. So we need to make sure that we, when we are blogging, that we're doing it in a responsible way, and we're doing it in a positive way, especially Facebook. Too many of the young people are seeing that and feeling so bashed up about their gender identity, that we need to make sure that we are doing what we can do in a positive and accepting way. And that is really why we are having this discussion. Every press release we do, we try to have that sort of inclusiveness, that if they need help, they can go to these avenues to make sure that they can get that help. And I guess my thoughts on this issue is, you know, one of the things that I'm most proud of, and when I walk down the street and I'm with my partner who's over here, he's been such a great support. We walk down the street holding hands, you know, and people come up to us and just like, you know, thank you. You're so brave. You know, we've never had one negative comment. So making it normal for everybody, you know, making it so that it's accepting, you know, seeing us, me and my partner on the street holding hands, is one thing that is giving other people strength. And that, for me, has been great as being a leader, you know, in that change. You know, PDA has not done enough. Thank you to our hosts, St. Andrews on the Terrace. Thank you, Margaret, for letting us have this venue. It's a great venue. To have these discussions inside of a church is something incredible. I would never have thought about 10 years ago. And thankfully, finally, thank you for turning up. You know, otherwise we'd be talking to ourselves. But thank you again to the panelists. A round of applause for you, please.